Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
If it's Tuesday, American, then you're enjoying some common sense on Southern Sense, American, here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, Annie, along with my debonair, my sophisticated and so politically acute co-host, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Mikey.
Well, great to be here, Annie. Great to be here, everyone. I missed everyone having missed just last the week's show, and it's great to be here. Thank you for, it's great to be here again on this,
You know what?
Tuesday, the 24th of September.
We hit a turning point, too. I went on to a Blog Talk Radio this morning just to see what was going on, and I looked at our numbers, and guess exactly how many listens we had as of 8 o'clock this morning. Exactly.
You tell me.
460,000 even.
Wow.
Not N1, so we're just 40,000 shy of hitting that half million mark. And, you know, we have done all of that in just the past year, because when you joined me 2 years ago, I think I may have had 20,000 people listening. And then once you joined this past year, it has just blossomed. I think we started off this year with maybe 100,000. So we've hit more than half a million in just this year. So I got to thank all our listeners out there. They are making this show rocket.
Well, and that is great. You know, we've worked hard. You're basically, for those who are listening, Annie does 100% of the work. I'm more or less fill the water buckets, but I mean, you've done a great job. And around in the Grand Rapids area, we have the people in East Town that would listen at the Kava House and several of our different cafes. They're known as the Radicals because they listen to our show loud, and sometimes a few disagreements ensue in these places of open to the public. But that's what it's all about. It's about the Republic, and as always, I mean, remembering our fallen heroes and our soldiers and the police officers and firemen who have given their life in the line of duty. Most people who have a job myself included, every day when you report to work, you don't really risk your life. You're not getting shot at or, you know, battling fires or fighting the enemy. And, you know, that's I think that's a big part of it. We have the best dedication on Blog Talk Radio as far as that's concerned. So,
yeah. Now, are you?
And we also have a special guest.
We've got. Looks like we're going to have two of them. Our guest today is going to be Congressman Mark Sanford, and we do have a secret guest we'll bring on shortly. But are you at your computer, or are you on the road?
Nope, I'm here. I got. I have the computer right in front of me.
All right, because I don't see you in the chat room. That's why I was curious.
Oh, you know what? I forgot to bring that up. But yes, it's great. It's great not to have somewhere to be in 10 minutes or 5 minutes. And so today I'm with you though throughout. But anyway,
anyone that listens to our show knows that every show starts off with a dedication to a fallen hero. And today's dedication goes out to Army Staff Sergeant Robert James Miller, Medal of Honor recipient, who died in combat in Konar Province, Afghanistan, January 25th, 2008. And this is dated from WTSP News, December 11th of 2012, out of Tallahassee, Florida. Florida pauses to honor a Florida soldier who received the nation's highest military honor, the Medal of Honor, for his heroic actions during a fierce gun battle in Afghanistan that claimed his life. Governor Rick Scott and the other state leaders honored Special Forces Staff Sergeant Robert James Miller of Oviedo during a ceremony at the state capitol. As Miller's parents watched, a memorial plaque of their son was unveiled. It will be placed on the wall in the Capitol, honoring all of Florida's Medal of Honor recipients. 24-year-old Rob Miller was serving his second tour in Afghanistan in January 2008 when his unit came under heavy gunfire. Governor Rick Scott said Miller bravely responded by charging the enemy and providing protective cover for members in his team. One soldier described the enemy like ants coming out of an anthill. Rob immediately engaged, providing cover for his unit to regroup and get to safety. Rob was relentless against the terrorists and suppressed the enemy forces with grenades and gunfire. He engaged the enemy so much that he attracted the most of the gunfire and made the ultimate sacrifice for his team, said Governor Scott. His courage and commitment to country saved a lot of men that day, and we are forever grateful for his service and sacrifice to our country, so we can enjoy our freedoms. Rob's mother, Maureen Miller, described him as the epitome of a Special Forces soldier who was proud of his family's military service dating back to the Revolutionary War. She recalled a description of her son offered at his memorial service. Robbie was the type of soldier that saw the hardships before him and stepped up to the challenge. He understood the hazards of combat and the risks of his service to our nation. He willingly bore the burden of the soldier. He was the epitome of the Special Forces soldier. He was a warrior among warriors. Miller's actions are credited with saving the lives of 7 U.S. soldiers and 15 Afghanistan Army soldiers. Robert Miller is among 337 soldiers from Florida who had given their lives in the fight against terrorism as of December 11, 2012. His Medal of Honor citation reads, "The President of the United States of America, in the name of Congress, takes pride in presenting the Medal of Honor to Staff Sergeant Robert James Miller, United States Army, for conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty. Staff Sergeant distinguished himself by extraordinary acts of heroism while serving as the weapons sergeant in Special Forces Operational Detachment Alpha 3312, Special Operations Task Force 33, Combined Joint Special Operations Task Force Afghanistan during combat operations against an armed enemy in Konar Province, Afghanistan on January 25, 2008. While conducting a combat reconnaissance patrol through the Gowardash Valley, Staff Sergeant Miller and his small element of U.S. and Afghan National Army soldiers engaged a force of 15 to 20 insurgents occupying prepared fighting positions. Staff Sergeant Miller initiated the assault by engaging the enemy positions with his vehicle's gun-mounted Mark 19 40mm automatic grenade launcher, while simultaneously providing detailed descriptions of the enemy positions to his command, enabling effective, accurate, close air support. Following the engagement, Staff Sergeant Miller led a small squad forward to conduct a battle damage assessment. As the group neared the small, steep, narrow valley that the enemy had inhabited, a large, well-coordinated insurgent force initiated a near ambush, assaulting from elevated positions with ample cover. Exposed and with no or little available cover, the patrol was totally vulnerable to enemy rocket-propelled grenades and automatic weapon fire. As the point man, Staff Sergeant Miller was at the front of the patrol, cut off from supporting elements and less than 20 meters from enemy forces. Nonetheless, with total disregard for his own safety, he called for his men to quickly move back to covered positions as he charged the enemy over exposed ground and under overwhelming enemy fire in order to provide protective fire for his team. While maneuvering to engage the enemy, Staff Sergeant Miller was shot in his upper torso. Ignoring the wound, he continued to push the fight, moving to draw fire from over 100 enemy fighters upon himself. He then again charged forward through an open area in order to allow his teammates to safely reach cover. After killing at least 10 insurgents, wounding dozens more, and repeatedly exposing himself to withering enemy fire while moving from position to position, Staff Sergeant Miller was mortally wounded by an enemy fire. His extraordinary valor ultimately saved the lives of 7 men of his own team and 15 Afghanistan National Army soldiers. Staff Sergeant Miller's heroism and selflessness above and beyond the call of duty and at the cost of his own life are in keeping with the highest traditions of military service and reflect good credit upon himself and the United States Army. To him and to all men, we dedicate this song, My Name is America, by Todd Allen Herndon, to all those that have served, are serving, and will serve. We can never say thank you enough. God bless to them all.
In the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend, because my name is America. I stand proud and free. My name is America. Don't tread on me. I cannot be broken. I cannot be I stand for my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour, because my name is America. I stand proud. My name.
Hi, Todd Allen Herndon. My name is America. You can download that at toddallen.com. You know, Mike, sometimes you think you're going to be able to get through the dedication without getting choked up, but sooner or later, I come across something that's written in there that just hits me, and then I lose it. So.
Well, I mean, these are, our show is a serious show based on politics, but I mean, it's also grateful in the sense that these are real challenges. There are people, as we speak, being shot at and being killed, defending the liberties in which we take for granted day in and day out. Many of us, you know, appreciate it, but still, during the day, we forget what is taking place oftentimes. And this dedication, it touches home. Every single person who is killed in some ways, they're like a brother or sister, son or daughter, nephew, niece, cousin, next door
neighbor.
Father,
mother.
Yes, and it's not an easy thing to do. If you know, John Kennedy said we go after these things not because they're easy, but because they are hard. And this dedication is a hard thing to do. It was hard for me to listen to you, but I mean, the reason we do it is to pay tribute and to remind everyone before the show of a fallen hero who, in a sense, we may not have heard of, he or she, and what they have done unless we bring this to their attention. So I think it's a great dedication, and hopefully they're up there, you know, smiling on this show.
And looking down over our nation from above. I want to welcome everyone in the chat room and that's listening in online or on the phone. We have a whole lot of stuff going on this year. We have a lot of off election year elections. You know, that didn't come out right, did that? Off-year elections?
Well,
off-year election.
And,
okay.
Well, non-big general election things. And for those of you who are wondering, every now and then I've been missing shows with Annie. We're actually going to explain to you why I have been, because she's actually on the line. We are joined by Grand Rapids City Comptroller Sarah Vanderwerf. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we got you. Loud and clear.
There's a little echo, but yeah.
Oh, I have you on speakerphone. Let me try picking up.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
I used to have a lot of conference calls, so we frequently used the speaker and the mute button so we could multitask.
Well, for those wondering why I'm not here, is I have taken on the task of my fellow Catholic Central Cougar alumni's directing her campaign for comptroller, so the city of Grand Rapids, to retain her. And I thought this would be not only a good time for her to meet Annie, because I'm always saying, Annie, I can't make it. I have the campaign today. But a chance, a lot of people are asking us, what is a comptroller? And I thought, you know what? We can bring a comptroller on, and they can explain exactly what a comptroller does. And if we can keep it in layperson terms, because most comptrollers tend to talk way above me with these big words. And I'm like, okay.
That's not hard.
Yeah. Gee, thanks, Annie. Sarah, you want to explain for our listeners what exactly is a comptroller?
Oh, well, sure. But first, I'd like to thank Annie for having me on the show and for the dedication to our fallen soldiers. I have friends and family in the military, not unlike a lot of other people, and it's easy to forget as we go about our day-to-day lives and September 11 gets further and further from us, you know, that sacrifices continue to be made every day overseas. And so, anyways, thank you for that. So what was the question? What is a comptroller?
Yeah, what exactly does a comptroller do? You see on TV, company comptroller, city comptroller, and everyone's
mm-hmm.
like...
There's the comptroller of the currency also for the United States, which is a little bit different from what I do. The city comptroller in Grand Rapids was established by the 1916 charter, which is kind of like the city's constitution, as sort of a checks and balances to our treasurer. And the comptroller, to oversimplify it, has three functions: accounting, accounts payable, and auditing.
Okay, so basically, if the city needs to pay a bill, it goes across your desk, is that correct?
Well, we have a staff of 15, but accounts payable is a large part of the job. And it's not just about writing the checks and paying the bills. It's making sure that all of the policies and procedures are being followed.
Okay. Annie, so, you've got
for example,
I'm gonna ask what happens if somebody isn't following.
that's a good question, because sometimes things do come to us. We get an invoice and it hasn't gone to the commission, or there hasn't been a contract in place, and that can cause a delay in the payment. And you know, we hate to have that happen. But that's the purpose behind the policies and procedures, is to make sure that things aren't slipping through that are unauthorized.
All right. Well, I'm gonna throw an example at you. I've recently been locking horns with my county council, and if I tell you the underhanded trick that was pulled on me this morning, you'll laugh. I've been going after them on certain things on the budget. Now, do you get involved in the actual budget items, reviewing it and saying, okay, this does pass the smell test, no, this doesn't pass the smell test?
Yes and no. We track the budget, but the smell test that we follow more is the approval process and the procedures for paying the items that come through City Hall. The budget process is something that is set by the commission, and if something isn't in the budget, that is one of the checks and balances. If it hasn't been approved as a budget item, it has to go back as an amendment to the budget.
I'm wondering, I don't even know if we have a comptroller here in Beaufort County. Come to think of it, I don't think we do.
Well, not everybody has an elected comptroller, but you probably have somebody that serves that function. Depending on how large your county is, it may be somebody who holds another role.
Mm. That's very interesting, because I'm thinking, you can't have the treasurer doing that, because it's kind of like, you know, putting the fox in charge of the hen house.
Well, that was the reason behind the elected comptroller in Grand Rapids. But I believe in some municipalities or government organizations, if they're, you know, if it's a small town, you might have the same person fulfilling that function. And you know, you always have an auditing process. Most government organizations have an external audit come in. We currently have our external auditors in-house right now for the month of September, overlooking from an external basis what we do. The City of Grand Rapids issues a number of bonds, so part of that, the reason behind that audit is, you know, for our bond ratings and so on and so forth.
So what you're saying in some ways is that a smaller type municipality may have a person who plays a role as a part-time this and a part-time comptroller, more than likely an office position or somebody worked. You wouldn't actually see the guy doing the heating and cooling / comptroller, but you would see more or less.
Well, that's true.
But you would see more or less like an office type position, whether it's an accountant or somebody who works with the books.
Yes, yeah. I would imagine there are some checks and balances in place. You know, you might have one person initiate the function and then somebody else has to approve it, but you may not have a separate treasurer and a separate comptroller.
All right. Now, Annie, we're going to see how well Annie, a couple years back, Annie kind of took me under her wing, Sarah, and schooled me a little bit. So let's see how well I've done. Sarah, you are running for comptroller in Grand Rapids. Why should we vote for you over your opponent?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. I was recently appointed. We went through a vetting process. The City Commission has the authority to fill vacancies, and the current position was vacant. And there were a number of candidates that applied, and of the candidates that applied, I was chosen because I was the most qualified. And I'm not sure that's entirely the case with my opponent. I don't know her personally, and I understand she's been involved in city politics and, you know, might be comfortable with numbers, but she doesn't have an accounting degree or financial experience. The other reason, or one of the reasons I chose to apply and run for this position is, over the years, like many people, I've become a little bit frustrated with, you know, taxes going up all the time, and I may not differ with my opponent on this, but I've watched my parents, you know, pinch their pennies as they raised myself and my siblings, and now that we're all out of the house and gainfully employed, I'm still watching them pinch their pennies, and you know, except for most recent years when, you know, we've had the financial crisis and you've seen some significant cutbacks, the government, to me, it seems like we're still spending like there's no tomorrow. Now, that being said, the city of Grand Rapids has gone through substantial cuts, about 30%, and wage concessions across the board to the tune of about 12.5%. But I'm concerned that, you know, as economies come out of recessions, usually you have it's kind of like a ski slope effect or the check mark where you go the recovery is usually quicker and more significant than what we're experiencing now. We are on a slow recovery, but I'm concerned that at some point we may forget where we came from, and I personally don't want to see another great recession in my lifetime, and I'm concerned about debt, particularly at the federal level, that's accumulated. We hear a lot about reducing the deficit, but what isn't talked about as much is the actual debt. And I used to work in the banking industry, and from time to time met with our chief economists when they came into town, and I tried to pull them to side and get them off the record on the subject. You know, how much debt is too much? And granted, it's very complicated. You know, how we borrow, and the countries that we borrow from also benefit from our country, so we're all kind of in this together, but nobody seems to be able to answer how much debt is too much debt. And again, I'm approaching politics at the local level, and the city of Grand Rapids is nowhere near that, but we're impacted by the federal government. Some of the funding that we get is federal grants, so we have to be very careful how we spend our tax dollars now and in the future. I having been brought up by a penny pincher, I guess I feel that I value every penny of every tax dollar, and that's why I would like people to vote for me.
All right, now, Sarah, do you have a degree in accounting, and does your opponent also have one?
I have a degree in accounting. I understand my opponent has some kind of a biology or science degree.
Aha, I see, says the blind man. So we have someone that knows more about, you know, wildlife than they know about books.
Well, I think it's more in the medical arena, but yeah.
Okay, at least we know where to go if we do get sick.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, the city charter does not specify credentials for the position. And back in 1916, maybe you didn't need somebody specifically with an accounting degree. I suspect that city finances were a lot simpler back then. But after the process that I went through, I kind of got the impression that the commission and I would hope the voters would want somebody who has some credentials for this specific position that is not only an elected position but a department head of sorts.
Yeah, no, it was funny. I'm going to reflect back to what I know from my county council. We recently had two members elected to the council, and they're excellent conservatives, and they recently voted on a budget. And the budget was so poorly written and so vague that, you know, even I, who does not have an official accounting degree, I only know, you know, basic business accounting, and I'm looking at this thing and I'm shaking my head and going, oh no, this is way off the cliff. And fortunately, these two new people did vote against the budget, but they didn't know how to read it. And here they're sitting on the county council. And it wasn't until we started pointing out the problems in the budget. You know, the average citizen had to come up to the county council and they were putting together a budget that they didn't even understand. And I still went at them tooth and nail last night. And it was their third and final reading on the amendment to the budget. And it went through without, you know, doing anything that we were asking to do to lower some taxes. And next thing I know, I get a phone call this morning from the county assessor. And he was, like, ready to put his dukes up with me over the phone. And he said, well, did you say that your property taxes went up 200%? And I said, yes. And there's the problem with that. He goes, well, he starts to explain how the property taxes go. I understand how the property taxes go. But when I had made that statement, I stated that it had occurred over a 10-year period. And I said, my property taxes have doubled, but my home value has decreased.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're telling me that the rate has been flat for the last several years, explain to me how my property taxes are still going up. And he couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like Andrew Wilkow said this argument cannot be broken. And we've got the problem. We need someone like you down here to go over everything and say, wait a minute, does it match the smell test?
Part of all that is the fact that, you know, we need more concerned citizens. I don't know how many, as much as different as states and cities are, in a lot of ways they're so similar. How many people were behind you, Annie, yelling and cheering, you know, as their lead cheerleader? Probably not a lot. And the fact is, you know, one of the reasons I really like Sarah is that she obviously came from a position that paid her a lot more, and so she took a pay cut to become a public servant. And we need more people like all of us, whether it's a person takes a position to serve the public or it's just a citizen at a meeting screaming to the point there's no more paint on the walls, because it's almost like in many, many ways, when you stand with a crowd of 50, they hear the screams a lot louder than the person who stands alone.
Yeah, the person that stands alone is going to be made to look like they're a little radical or off the wall. And therefore not credible. So, you know, we city officials, you know, we know what we're doing, and what we say is the law, but this person that's speaking out by themselves is not necessarily.
Yeah.
So it to really make an impact, you need people behind you.
Which is
so the more people that get involved, the more people that get concerned about the issues. And I think we're seeing that a little bit because the Great Recession impacted so many. I think more people, particularly the middle class, that was another reason I chose to do this. I think what another thing that we're seeing, and this isn't in news, you see this in headlines from time to time, is the disparity between the haves and the have-not. That gap is growing. You see this in other countries, but in the United States, we have enjoyed a lifestyle that the middle class has enjoyed a good quality of life for themselves and their families. And with the Great Recession, we're seeing that changing across the board. You know, there might be different levels of middle class, but I think everybody in the middle class felt the Great Recession. The layoffs were across the board. It was not just blue collar, it was white collar. And if we kept going at the rate we were going, regardless of, you know, the real estate bubble and the financial crisis, that gap is just going to continue or starting to
so you
trip
deal,
over
okay.
my words a little bit, but if you look at other countries, other post-industrial nations, the unemployment level's higher, the concentration of wealth is held by a very small percent, and the poor are much poorer than what we see in our country, except maybe in the Appalachian Mountains. I don't know. I hear stories. Not to make a joke of poverty, but to see that disparity, it really gives you pause, and that's not a direction that we want our country to go to. And everything begins and ends at the local level. I just had FEMA training, and that was one of the phrases they kept saying over and over again. And it's the same thing with politics and in government. Our representatives all start at the local level, who we have in Washington. They all came from somewhere before they went to Washington. So, anyways, it's.
I want to ask a question. Okay, you're my candidate, and we're working hard. But you deal with real numbers, and people know me as kind of a crazy person on the radio. But you deal with real numbers and finance, correct?
That would be a fair statement.
Okay, so look at the country, and especially let's concentrate on the state of Michigan, because Annie, you need to move to Michigan. The governor.
No, we need more Annies in Michigan.
No, you got to go up.
Annie, we get in this big free bridge. We got free health care. The governor works for. I mean, everything is free. Why would you want to live anywhere else? As a person who deals with real numbers, Sarah, how is this possible? Everything is free. It's free.
Well, it's interesting you say that. We have a program right now going on, and it's a great program. It's to provide smoke detectors to citizens who may or may not be able to afford it, and the fire department is coming to your home and installing them. But the way it's made possible is through a federal grant. And so did that come out of Grand Rapids taxpayers or Michigan tax dollars? Not necessarily, but the federal grant money comes from taxpayers. So at some level, Grand Rapids residents have already paid for this. So if it's free, well, what do they say? If it's too good to be true, it's not. Somebody's paying for it somewhere.
No, that's what a lot of people fail to realize. You've got the SNAP program. You've got welfare. You've got the free phones. You can start on federal program after federal program after federal program where we pay for all these little extra perks without any controlling rein on it. And one of the things
Bill. Read the detail on your phone bill.
Yeah, every last one of us on every single phone we have, whether it's a landline or a cell phone or your internet connection or your high-speed dish network through your telephone bill, you paying more and more money for those Obama phones. And there's no rein in. They just better give it away for free without checking to see if anyone's actually eligible for it. And these government programs have burgeoned so huge that I'm glad that the Republicans took this new bill where they cut back on the SNAP program saying, hey, listen, you've got to prove eligibility and you've got to prove if you are able to or not able to work. And it's about time we start doing that.
Well, and I mean, one thing that really bothers me is that word free. I think I was sitting with Sarah the other day, and I used it twice, and almost smacked myself in the head, is that mentality. If we think healthcare is expensive now, wait till it's free. I mean, and the governor, our governor here in Michigan, who I absolutely detest, talks about this bridge is going to cost like $1 billion, but it's free. And I think, okay, Rick Schneider is probably worth between $200 and $500 million. Are we really under the impression this man is working as governor for free? Are people of that great means really working for free? Those people don't know the way free. I mean, that and just our mentality of it. It's just, this is free, that's free. No, it's not free. And, I mean, I agree in many, many ways that I think if local levels can find ways to provide preventive care and do certain things, it definitely will save costs, no doubt about it. But, I mean, I think on the doubt from a comptroller standpoint, where I was saying with Sarah, who deals with real numbers, when something costs more than the numbers you have in front of you, I guess that's where your audit or your accounts payable come into effect. And this is where we're coming. I mean, we're coming to a point to where is sooner or later that collection bill comes in the mail, and then followed by a second one 2 weeks later. Then the dreaded phone calls. Yeah, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, that bill didn't get paid. And I mean, sooner or later, you know, you only can a truck can only hold so much payload before the tires burst flat. Go ahead, Annie. I'll let you comment. Sorry, I didn't mean to kind of go on my little soapbox.
No, Sarah is 100% right. You know, it does begin at the local level. It's something that I've been saying all along. You know, how we pick our elected officials at the local level will reflect how we send them further up the food chain. You know, you got the state level, then you got the federal level, and how we choose that person and how we decide whether or not we continue to elect them to office, if they follow the will of the people or not. Or are we too lazy to impose the will of the people on our elected officials? And it starts at the local level. Sarah, you are 100% right.
And that's one of the reasons I supported Sarah, is because, you know, Sarah's not a politician. She's very educated. Of course, she went to the best high school known to man and woman. But, you know, I mean, Sarah's not for sale. And you see this. Annie, something you said earlier, and we talked about this before. People whisper in Sarah's ear, watch out for Cool Mike. Well, watch out, yeah, of course, because I'm not one of them. And elected officials are telling her this. Watch out. Yeah. I mean, this is we're always fighting an establishment. That because Sarah, myself, and you, Annie, and your husband, Yanni, and my parents, they're too dumb to make decisions on their own. So you know what? We have all these wonderful politicians that are going to help do the thinking for us. They're going to spend our money for us. Because guess what? They know how to spend it better than we do. Although we earn it, that's nothing more, that's irrelevant. I mean, and that type of mentality is very scary.
Well,
it makes me nervous.
All right. Well, I think we've got our next guest in.
Okay.
So, Sarah, if you want to stay with us, let me bring in our guest here. All right. And we do have with
us. Sarah's got to check her email, so we're going to go to our next guest. Sarah's got to check her email and then get back with me. But do we have the congressman?
Are you letting me go?
Well, Sarah.
Yes. How are you?
Yes. Hey, Mark Stanford. Sarah, thanks for joining us. Go ahead. How are
you? Good afternoon, Congressman.
Well, it's good to hear your voices, I guess, more correctly.
Well, let me tell you, Congressman, since the day you got elected, I've been following you like a hawk, just waiting to jump down your throat. And I told Annie a little while ago, I said, you know what? This guy is awesome. And we appreciate, since you have gotten in office, to the letter of your words, you have stood true. And I know Justin Amash thinks highly of you as well. And I must say, I very much am certainly glad to have to be able to say we helped get Mark Stanford elected.
Well, I appreciate you doing so. It's been really interesting to be back in Congress, and it's proven to be an incredibly pivotal point in both the growth and limitation of government, and in Obamacare, and in foreign policy. I mean, a whole host of issues. It's been awfully busy.
Yeah, now, you guys, you guys, congressman, went forward and he passed that defunding of Obamacare with the budget that you sent over to the House. Now, Harry Reid is trying to pull some senatorial tricks. What do you expect to see coming back from the Senate coming into you?
I mean, I suspect what they're going to do is they're going to strip out the Obamacare portion. And they'll send back a bill, quote, you know, the quote, clean CR, wherein they fund government and pretty much leave it alone at that. We'll see. I mean, I don't know, but that would be my reading of the tea leaves at this point.
Yeah, I was hearing a lot of people talking about when it comes back to the House that maybe it may be tied into raising the debt ceiling. And if that happens, you're going to hear a lot of angry people coming back. Now, if it comes back to the House, is there a possibility of putting that defunding back into the bill?
Well, what the House leadership at this point has begun to say is that they're going to attach the Obamacare defund to the debt ceiling debate, and that would occur as early as this week. For some of us, we've raised some level of question about that simply because it seems a little premature. I mean, typically with a negotiation, you have offer, and then you have counterpoint, and then you have another offer, and you sort of go back and forth till you strike a deal or walk away. And at this point, given that Obamacare was attached as a CR, to go before the Senate ultimately even come back with whatever their proposal might be and go out with a debt ceiling bill that had Obamacare is just, I guess, to throw up a white flag and signal defeat on CR and Obamacare. But again, we'll see all that's going to play out over the next couple of days.
Well, now, there was an interesting editorial. Kathleen Parker from the Washington Post is not one of my favorite people, but even she is starting to say that the GOP strategy might be the right strategy to delay Obamacare until you can take a look at the whole thing and figure out either how to fix it or what to do with it. And I think by writing this in the Washington...
I saw the piece that she wrote, and I think, I guess the saying is if you like sausage, don't watch it being made, and the same is true of the political process and the formulation of law. And you know, I think that the basic ingredients of what she was arguing is that, one, we have a piece of legislation that's not ready for prime time, that if you look at actual implementation, there are going to be a lot of families, a lot of individuals that are hurt in going into a system that really isn't formatted yet. And so it'd be a win for the Democrats in that perspective. It'd be a win for the Democrats from the standpoint of, I suspect, shielding them at some level from voter wrath. I mean, I would argue that, you know, if you let the thing go ahead and it fails, as it is, I think, destined to do, then you're going to have a lot of people upset in the midterm congressional elections. And from a Republican standpoint, the idea of using whatever means possible to slow up or delay a system that I think forever changes the way in which goods, products, or services are purchased in America, whether they're mandated or whether it's a voluntary choice, and a very hefty tax increase, and I think a job killer, is something that has merit as well. So we may end up evolving to that point, but at this point it seems as if you got two parties that are fairly far apart, with Republicans saying, let's put the brakes on the thing, and Democrats saying, no, it's in, and let's keep it going. And we'll see how it plays out over the next week.
Well, you know, as a taxpayer, Congressman, why would I support your policy? I mean, free roads, free bridges, free phones, free this, free that, free health care. Well, it's all free.
Yeah.
Why would I oppose that? It's free.
Well, hopefully somewhere back there in elementary school you learn how math either adds or doesn't add up. And free ultimately doesn't add up because, as we all know, there are no, quote, free lunches in life. And though this has been advertised to be one, there's a very substantial cost. It's interesting to see the unadvertised and unintended consequence of this bill. So I remember the president standing up and saying, you know, hey, if you like the insurance you got, just keep it. Well, that didn't exactly prove to be the case because, I mean, my alma mater, I went to UVA for grad school, they have said to all spouses and dependents, guess what? We're ending your insurance because we can't afford it with Obamacare. UPS has gone out and said the same thing. You know, I saw where SeaWorld was laying off employees because of Obamacare. It's really having an adverse impact both from the standpoint of employment and in some cases insurance availability for dependents with literally thousands upon thousands of people.
That is true. And my own godson recently, a couple of months back, got his hours cut to 29 hours. The Jardin restaurants, which is Red Lobster, and I think the other one is the Olive Garden that they have. They have a bunch of these chains. They've already cut theirs last year. And, I mean, just a week ago, I stood in front of our county council begging them not to raise the millage rates because of the looming Obamacare costs. And, mm-hmm. of course, do you think they would be listening to me? No. So, mm-hmm. of course, we got the wrong end of the stick on the budget here. But people don't realize what's coming down the road. And it's people like you and Mike Lee and Cruz that are out there trying to blow the horn. And until it hits people directly in the pocket, I don't think that anyone's really listening.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's about to happen. I mean, come October 1st, it really begins to go into effect. And so from the standpoint of it beginning to impact people's pocketbooks, I think you're going to see that. The reverse is also true, though. I think it was Ronald Reagan that said the closest thing to eternal life is a government program. And, you know, there's a whole lot of truth to that. Once these things lay in roots, they're really difficult to dislodge. And I think that's why there's been legitimacy to where Republicans have come from and saying, wait a minute, we got to stop, block or delay this in any way possible, because after October 1st, it really begins to set in roots. And so you've had this confluence of the end of the financial year for the federal government coming at the end of September and the beginning of Obamacare coming at the October 1st. And the result you've seen, you know, Republicans trying to use the only tool in the toolkit to dislodging it, and that's been both the CR and the funding of the federal government going forward, and soon to be at debt ceiling debates as ways of stopping, blocking, or dislodging, I think, a very flawed bill.
Now, you also tied into the bill the SNAP program. But is it only just SNAP, or are you also going after welfare, too?
Well, that was a separate bill that came up this week. So you're right, it did come up in the same time period. And historically, there's been sort of a, you know, from a conservative or from a taxpayer standpoint, an unholy alliance between ag programs and welfare. So you combine the Northeast, inner city vote bloc that might have had a focus on let's say, welfare programs with ag, which is sort of rural America, and you had enough votes to get both through. They've always been combined for a very long time they've been combined. This year, and I think this was an exciting development, it was new to see in coming back to Congress, basically conservatives revolted, and they say if they're not greater cuts to welfare, we're not supporting the ag side. And so the agriculture bill actually failed in the House of Representatives. So the instructions that the different folks in leadership had gotten was you need to decouple them. And so the ag bill came back through. It passed. I actually voted against it. I still think that there's a real problem with subsidies to agriculture at a time when you have commodities at all-time high prices, but that's a separate debate. Anyway, it went through. And then just this week, the second component, the welfare component, went through with fairly substantial cuts to welfare and some work requirements, which I think have long been needed. You know, I was there the last time welfare reform went through, which is back in the mid-1990s, and we had work requirements. Unfortunately, over the last 20 years, many states have basically walked away from the work requirements and really made a mockery of that original reform legislation that occurred in the 1990s. And so this put teeth back into, I think, the legitimate point of saying, sure, government will help, but you ought to be helping yourself as well. And if that means looking for work and doing work while you you know, are a recipient of these different federal aid programs, you ought to be doing so. And anyway, that bill went through, but it was a purely Republican-Democrat vote. A handful of Northeast Republicans deflected, but not enough to sink the bill. And so Republicans carried that through. We'll see what happens on the Senate side.
We can only just cross our fingers, because already I think Mitch McConnell stated that he would not block it, which is really disturbing, because you would think that, you know, once it comes from a solid Republican, it was straight. You actually had one Democrat that voted with you on this bill. So,
okay, I missed that. Thank you for correcting me.
Wait, well, we gotta keep on top of you. Gotta keep on
absolutely
top of you.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
Now, you know, because of Ted Cruz's stance, he's been taking a heck of a lot of heat from some of the establishment in the GOP. Not them. I'm not talking about just Harry Reid on the Democratic side, because I believe it was yesterday on the floor he tore Cruz a new one, even though he didn't name him specifically.
Right.
But what is this with our own party eating each other? You've got the old boy establishment against those of you that are the conservatives.
Well, you know, I think that there's got to be a sorting out or a food fight, if you will, really until probably the next presidential election. I mean, there is no titular head of the Republican Party from the standpoint of elected office. And so there is, I think, a fairly earnest debate going on right now on what does it mean to be Republican. And so for some of us, it means lower taxes, less government, more in the way of market-based activity. And for others, it's a bit of a blurry line. It means a little bit less than what the Democrat would offer, but let's not go too far on limited government, limited taxes, or market-based principles. And so you have folks like Ted Cruz who have been leading the effort saying, wait a minute, our country really is at a tipping point. If you look at, in fact, Congress's own numbers, Congressional Budget Office numbers, what they show is that by 2025, I mean, it's only, what is it, it's like 12 years out, we will only have enough money coming in to pay for interest and entitlements and nothing else. So all these academic debates that we have in Washington about funding this program versus that, there's not enough money for any of them if we don't get our financial house in order. And at that point, you're either going to look at fairly draconian increases in taxes or draconian cuts to government or a bunch of borrowing, but we're running out of runway on our ability to continue to borrow. And so I think that, we are at a tipping point. And so one school of camp says, let's deal with it now. And another school says, no, let's be more moderate. Let's kick it down the can down the road. Let's not upset folks. But I think that, you know, the Bible says be hot, be cold, but don't be lukewarm. And I think that people really do want to change in Washington, and they absolutely want to change from, you know, this sort of financial morass that we found ourselves in and the one that we're headed into.
It is a lot of morass. You know, I don't know if you, did you catch Obama's speech before the UN today?
I did not.
Oh, man, I scribbled about 3 pages of notes, and I'm sitting there, and my husband, Yanni, and I are looking at each other screaming at the TV, and he's going, calm down, I'm not going to throw something at the TV, I promise. He's been talking about since the day he was elected about closing Gitmo, but he hasn't actually moved towards it, and he's bragging about transferring terrorist prisoners to other countries. But isn't that the very rendition that they all screamed about when Bush was doing it? Yeah, I don't understand how he could talk through both sides of his face.
Well, I don't think that politics is, tragically a place where there's a whole lot of consistency with many of its participants. And so, I guess folks in politics assume that people in memory in politics, the people who watch or vote in politics have short memories. And I think that to your point, you would remember that, and a handful of others would, but a lot of other folks wouldn't, and it would sound relatively good, and people keep on moving. So I think it's, I think it goes back to what the founding fathers talked about and the importance of an informed electorate. And it wasn't about, you know, sports pages or sort of what was happening, you know, just sort of generally out there, but actually having a founding and a knowledge of both constitutional principles of what this whole country was set up on and about what people had said in the past so that they could be judged accordingly. And so I just applaud what you and others do in talk radio and what neighbors do in talking to neighbors and saying, wait a minute, that isn't what they said before, because if enough people do that, it creates pushback that I think is vital to creating change.
Yeah, another thing he said that really stopped me in my tracks, he said that our world is more stable than 5 years ago, hinting at Bush didn't leave a stable country or international situation. But I find it far more unstable with his breaking of certain relationships, such as, you know, harming Israel in certain remarks he had, backing the wrong side in Egypt, wanting to bomb Syria, and then in the same speech saying that the United States will not act unilaterally. He never said we would act unilaterally. I don't understand how people can be so forgetful. You know, you're saying that, you know, you applaud us for doing this, but how do we keep this fresh in front of everyone's mind so they can actually make that informed decision?
I don't think that there's any silver bullet there. I mean, I was just talking to a group a moment ago about, you know, sort of grassroots politics, and that it comes down to the basic blocking and tackling of neighbors talking to neighbors, business folks talking to fellow business folks. Everybody has a sphere of impact and influence, and it's different sizes for different folks. But everybody has somebody with whom they can have a degree of impact, and I think it's incumbent upon any of us who love liberty and love the theme of constitutionally limited government to make our voice heard, because if not, folks surely from the other perspective will be making their voice heard, and it's the loudest voices that win in the way our system was designed. And so I don't, like I say, think that there's a silver bullet other than people being active participants in this process.
Congressman, why are so many Republicans, let's kind of stick with our own party, but why are so many Republicans for bigger and bigger government? Recently, the fight about the NSA, and this goes back several years. Why is it Republicans are just not opposed to more and more these new government departments and the ballooning of it towards, you know, I think, and this even goes before Ray, I think back in the, I mean, there's a certain point in time where, I mean, you talk about these things as a Republican, you were a full-fledged outcast. And now It almost seems like you and many others are the outcasts.
Sure. You know, what I would say is, Eisenhower warned against the military defense establishment, or he had some phrase like that. And, a lot of these different entities, from a financial standpoint and other standpoint, make their voice heard in Washington. And so, you know, I think that that's why there's real value in people saying, where are you coming from? And, you know, where are your campaign contributions coming from as well? Not that one can't give. Everybody has the right to make their voice heard, but to see if there's a concentration in where, you know, somebody's coming from and where a lot of, you know, their support comes from, et cetera. So I'd say part of what's going on there is, I suspect, tied to where money flows in Washington, D.C. And then part of it is, I don't know. I mean, I just got a weird disconnect with where regular folks are coming from. I remember when leadership and on the Republican side, as well as obviously Democrats and the president, were saying, you know, we got to go in, we got to bomb Syria. And I was sitting there saying, well, you know, I don't know who y'all are talking to, but this isn't what I'm hearing back home. You know, folks I'm talking to sort of believe in the Powell Doctrine of, you know, define for me why it's in our strategic interest, and then define for me what impact we can have and where we could have an impact. And then define for me the exit strategy. If we don't sort of pass all three tests, I'm really reticent about going in and spending more money in a place where we spent a couple $1 trillion over the last couple of years. And so I just think at times folks, as you climb the ranks, oftentimes focus more on what folks in Washington are saying and less on what folks back in their home district might be saying.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct, because when I was listening to the speech, again, President Obama reiterated the fact that the government definitely used the weapons of mass destruction. But so far, all the reports that are coming out, no one can specifically say who fired them and who controlled them. The only thing they can say is that they had found evidence of them inside a rebel tunnel, that they were used inside, you know, a rebel stronghold. But how they turn around, and when Bush went into Iraq, said, oh, well, he lied. So now we're finding on the exact opposite side, President Obama is trying to push us into something without all the facts. Now, would the House be holding hearings on this?
Yeah, the House has held, or at least begun the process on that. And we've had a number of different intelligence reports on that front that have, I think, been most interesting and illuminating. And I suspect you'll hear more on that front. But right now it's been sort of top-down from the Intel Committee and others that we've heard from folks. I have to run back into this next meeting, but I just, you know, it's such a treat to join you again, and I would ask for another chance to do so in the hopefully not too distant future.
Oh, it has been a pleasure, Congressman Sanford, and I'll see you in church. God bless.
Look forward to it. See you.
Okay.
Take care. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right, that was Congressman Mark Sanford calling in from Congress, and he's going to have to go back into another meeting. So, yeah, he is. He's kind of tired, though. Yeah, but unfortunately,
he probably
is. Yeah.
Dealing with all those idiots down there. You know, Annie, in a lot of ways, you picture you and I down there, we'd be the ones always.
Sorry about that. I accidentally hit your mute when I was trying to play something else.
I was going to say, we'd be the ones that charged with smacking people upside their head, and we'd always be in trouble. But, I mean, it is refreshing to know when I made the sarcastic comment about free. And he points out, none of this is free. Hello, you idiots out there. You absolute morons. I mean, I just believe all of this is free. I mean, it isn't even a credit card mentality anymore, because with credit cards, you know, you have to make payments. This is just, I really cannot, it is unbelievable to me that how so many people with all of this going on, you know, do not get involved in city politics. And of course he's tired, because in many, many ways, even some of the own Republicans were hoping he wouldn't get elected, smearing him, of course, because of the improprieties, because simply they don't want those type of people down there. The guy that we supported, who was the military man, they really didn't want him going down there, the one for the primary. I mean, they don't want these people. They want robots. They want puppets. They want people that are going to be in awe of Mitch McConnell and whoever else. Not people who just believe in the liberties. How many times did Congressman Sanford revert back to the founders and the Constitution and small government? I was just like going, I was like insane. I was like, yeah, you go.
Well, you know, take a look at what happened to me this morning. You know, someone from the county council turned around to the assessor and says, why don't you call her and let's see if we can intimidate her because of what she said before the county council. And what happened was, this was the teleconference because they were all the way over in Hilton Head at the library. And so any of us that were in the northern end of the county would end up having to go to the council chambers and sit there and wait to be videoed into the meeting. And what I didn't know is that it was televised. I guess it was on the county council channel. So before I even got home, someone had called the house and said, hey, I saw Annie on TV. But I guess they were trying to intimidate me. If this person that's with the county official calls her and challenges her on what she says, you know, maybe she'll back down. Well, hello, I had my facts with me. And if you didn't listen to everything that was being said, then you took it out of, you know, context. And as I said, the argument cannot be broken. And this is what we have to do. We have to have our facts there. And when we stand up and we challenge them, those good old boys, when we challenge them, you have to be armed and ready. And what you're arming is your brain and your mouth. And if you can't handle
And at first, if you recall, the first time you went, they really never said anything. And then, of course, you came back. And then they might have mumbled this or that. But after a while, when you start pointing out to people the direct facts of how the money impacts, then they have to smear you. Because, you know, that's exactly how they do. They first ignore you, and then maybe they give you a little of attention or, yeah, you know, but that's exactly it. Now you've got their attention because you've got people's attention.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, bad girl, Annie. Naughty, absolutely. Naughty. How
absolutely.
Dare you fight those bureaucratic political hacks?
And
it's kind of like this. I always enjoy listening to that moron. I can't think of his name, the AFL-CIO douchebag. Who calls us teabaggers?
Are you talking
you know
about
what? I'm not sure. I lost track of all those bureaucratic morons. But I think it's teabaggers, communists. Hello, what percentage of the Tea Partiers are retired veteran and union workers? Hello, dummy. I mean, you listen to these morons talk, and they have no clue of their facts. Yet, they want to make it look like you and I don't have our facts. There's
mm-hmm.
a huge percentage of Tea Party people that are retired union people who are also veterans. The World War II people are, sadly, they've left us. They've departed us. But, I mean, this is ridiculous. This was founded on basically by veterans and retired middle-class people. And they call us communists? Oh, please.
No, it's the twisting of the facts. And, again, we go back to Herman Cain's, you know, saying that all progressives and liberals sin. They switch the subject, ignore the fact, and name call, S-I-N. And he nailed it right on the head. So we have to do the exact opposite. We don't switch the subjects. We do not ignore the facts, and we do not name call. What I'm going to do is call you progressive or a liberal. And if you take insult to that, well, hell. Hillary Clinton herself called herself a new progressive. So if you side with her, then you have no problem with the term progressive or liberal. It's not an insult. It's a term you chose for yourself. So there.
And also, when they refer to – here's another example. As I have the people in the Republican Party, in my Kent County Republican Party, as we were talking earlier, a lot of these nonpartisan elected officials, and they're, of course, nonpartisan right, they all belong to a party, are whispering in Sarah's ear, watch out for Mike, be careful, you know, what? God knows why, but whatever. But on the same token, in our own Republican Party, Annie, you're not going to believe this, but they're so downhearted, they now refer to Michael Elias as a liberal. I'm a liberal now.
I would say more of a libertarian, not liberal.
A person who's talking about eliminating half the size of government at all levels, a person that believes in getting rid of an awful lot of regulation that really an awful lot of it was passed at times where it's a mute law really right now. But I mean, okay. And if you think about it, the big smoking gun with the GOP, obviously state to state, it is different in your state than mine. But my view of right to work is now that we have a Department of Right to Work in Michigan, and we have the state helping entrepreneurs collective bargain and negotiate with employees. I mean, as Republicans, an awful lot who are entrepreneurs, you would think they would stand up with me and say that I don't need any help from the state. I don't need a politician involved in my business. And now they're actually being paid when, say, for example, you have a business here, Annie, and this nice state official comes to help you. They bill you like a lawyer for their time. So however long that person is sitting next to you, yeah, well, the bills just went out, so a lot of these entrepreneurs are just like, what the heck is this? So they're getting billed like lawyers.
You're paying taxes, right, so that these officials
not enough,
do this. You're paying taxes. So on top of those taxes, you get billed for the services.
Well, yeah, not enough taxes, though. Taxes aren't high enough. So in order to compensate because we have such low taxes, which, of course, it's not. It's somewhere between 4% and 7%. Weekly income tax that doesn't include sales tax and all the other stuff. On top of all that, just last week, the governor, who everyone loves so much around the United States, he'd make a great presidential candidate. He raised every single fee known in the state, whether it's hunting, fishing, automobile, just everything went up like 10%. But he said it wasn't a tax. It's fee. It's not a tax. It's just a fee.
Okay.
I mean, this is a never-ending this is our party. And I'm thinking to myself, how is it Democrats hate us so much? We're almost as bad as they are.
That explains why they have Jeff McDaniels doing these Michigan, come to Michigan commercials. I keep on seeing those and listening to the stories you tell me. I'm like, these are two different sides of a coin, absolute opposites. Hey, listen, did you catch this? Lois Lerner's back in the news again, and she's retiring on a government pension.
Yeah, you might want to tell that story. I was catching it up as Mark Stanford was talking.
Yeah, she's very quietly decided to take her retirement. And what is this quote here now? Since May, the IRS is taking decisive actions to correct failures in exempt organizations. BS. We spoke to Stacey Motz recently. I spoke to Diane Belsom recently. And none of them have had their applications approved. Let's see. Replacing top leadership through the chain of command. Okay. In other words, they're retiring who they can to get them out of the way. The question now is going to be whether or not she's going to be called up to testify before the Senate or House. Let's see. What does Orrin Hatch say, that rhino? All right. Just because Lois Lerner is returning from the IRS does not mean the investigation is over. Far from it. All right. Good for you then, Orrin. In fact, there are many serious unanswered questions that must be addressed so we can get to the truth. And that's per Orrin Hatch. See, Daryl Issa said, Lois Lerner's exit from the IRS does not alter the Oversight Committee's interest in understanding why applicants for tax-exempt status were targeted and inappropriately treated because of their political beliefs. So she's not off the hook. Thankfully, let's hope that they follow through, that she's not off the hook. Now,
well, let's hope so, too. And, I mean, here's another thing, Annie. I don't know if your state has this, but this has been introduced into Michigan. Certain states say if you order from the Internet and you're purchasing from their state, for example, if I in Grand Rapids, Michigan, am buying something on the Internet from Indianapolis, Indiana, there is no Indiana state sales tax you have to pay. Well, Michigan, on any product you now buy, you must pay a Michigan sales tax. So, for example, say Indiana someday decides to tax us. Guess what? Then you pay double the tax. You pay an Indiana state sales tax. And then you take a Michigan state sales tax, which is one of the reasons you're buying online in the first place, is because it's cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Never,
and they say that,
I mean, go ahead.
Every now and then that rears its ugly head, and they say they're there to help the local stores. Because big box stores can open up and do their merchandise over the Internet. They don't need a mortar and piston, a mortar building. They don't need a brick and mortar building. And every time they do that, we come up in arms and say no. And every single small business that opens around here has no problem. I mean, you're either going to succeed or fail based upon the quality of service you get. I mean, if I'm going out to a restaurant, that means that restaurant has to buy the food from somewhere locally. You know, it's not going to kill local business. If anything, it may help enhance local business. We got a Skype caller coming in. Let me see if I can bring this person on the line. Skype, you're
also
on the air live.
Keep in mind that, go ahead.
You know what? I saw your picture. I know you're married.
Hey.
But you're kind
Yo.
Of cute, Annie. Hey, Mike, how you doing? Hey, Annie.
Good, Joe.
Hey.
Hi. You know, another
for a New
thing
York cop,
not pointed
you're
out.
Cute.
Oh, thanks.
She's retired, but she's still a cop. Off the air, Joe, let me tell you some of the conversations we have when I say, Annie, did you see that innocent person the cops roughed up? And Annie's like, oh, it was guilty.
Oh, please, want the cop, always a cop.
Oh, no,
but, you know,
talking about
speaking
of cops, did you see the father that was forcibly ejected and arrested for speaking out to the school board about Common Core? Common Core
standards. I heard about it.
Yeah, I saw that, and I was screaming at the cop. I'm going, what the blankety blank?
I didn't see
the
video.
Doing? Oh, there is a video up there. And this guy was in the father's face to the point where when the father went to turn around, he bumps into the cop, and that's the excuse for arresting him for assaulting a police officer. That police officer himself should have been arrested for assaulting the father and for denying him his constitutional rights and for not allowing him to speak vocally about Common Core standards. His child is in that school. He needs to know what is going on with his child, be involved in the child's education, and I commend that father. Good for him.
Well, and I agree. And I think there were some people at our city hall meeting, and I opposed what they were proposed. They had signs, and they basically they're upset because people show up wearing sidearms, a gun on their sidearm. They have a permit, which is fine. These people are like me. They go there all the time. But these people showed up protesting it, saying, you know, it's you shouldn't be able to have a gun in there.
Well,
anyway,
if they're like you, Mike, nobody wants them to have guns, okay?
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyway, I obviously believe in our Constitution.
Of course,
right. And they've been coming forever. But just now they're making an issue of it, but they were blocking the camera with their signs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just public access TV. So they threw them out. And I'm just like, that's ridiculous. Let them stay. They weren't bothering anybody. And, I mean, it even takes the opposite opinion to stand up. When it's wrong against our rights, it's wrong, whether we support it or not.
Well, that's the whole purpose of behind freedom, is that even if we don't agree with the other side, they still have the right to voice their opinion.
Absolutely. Yep. And I found the article.
I have the article. I'll take a look at it. I just didn't read it
Father's
completely, and I'll take a look at the video. The thing is, what do I want to say? I came here because I'm looking at your description page, and you're supposed to have on Mark Sanford.
He just got off the air.
He just did.
Okay, let me ask you guys this, because most of the time when I come to a show, when they have a politician, it seems to me that I'm making the hosts red-faced. Because I ask very pointed questions, and you know me, Mike, all right? So I don't know if you want me, if next time you have a politician, is it advisable for me to show up? Because if I get a hold of a politician, I will fucking, I don't care if they're libertarians, I will put them over, you know, I will put them through the ringer.
Well, Joe, let me put it to you this way. Michelle Bachmann hung up on Annie. I think the questions were a little bit too hard.
Really?
And also, it was Annie who asked Mark Sanford about. She made me actually feel nervous when she said something about when he was running for office. She goes, "Well, I guess it is." But she said the way she worded it. She said, "As a governor with your sexual improprieties, how are we supposed to trust you as congressman?"
Very
and I
good.
Said, "Oh my God, Annie! Here you go."
Oh
you
no,
know,
that's a great question. Oh no, no. No, both of you, good, because you're supposed to have... No. We have too much respect for these fucking people, okay? If they knew what they were really doing, for us, we wouldn't have to question them at town meetings that you go to or through emails, et cetera. Good question. I would have asked, if I had known that you could ask that kind of question, let me loose. I will tell you what I...
Well, hang on, Joe, hang on. You
okay.
still have to be somewhat respectful.
Bullshit. The only thing
that
right, you
Joe, hang on a second. Hold on, guys. Do you think I'm only peaches and cream? There's some steel to this lady here.
Well, you're a cop. I know that.
No, my point is, Joe, you can't. Okay, the next question
I won't
comes
use
from
profanity.
Joe. You can't
what?
Be like, look, you asshole, that kid
no,
of yours
right,
is fat and ugly.
You're right. Like I said, not to use profanity. Not to use any other kind of epithets or anything like that, but if I ask a question that's pointed and is embarrassing, that's what congressmen are there for. They're to answer questions that the press...
I'm handing you the softball, because this Friday, it's candidate Derek Grayson. He's running for the Senate seat out of Georgia. He will be on Friday. And Derek Grayson is a minister, too.
I don't give a rat's ass.
So if you want to look him up, you know, he'll be our
guest
on Friday.
I don't want to look him up. If he's coming on your show and you're giving me the green light, cool.
All right.
Again, this is your show. I'm not going to come in and start making them feel like I'm here to like a bulldog to curse them out or to embarrass them in any way that is acceptable, okay? I will ask them questions they don't want to be asked.
Well,
that's fine. Are you going to ask them, like, if they're into kinky sex?
No, I'm not going to ask him that, but unless it's the second or third question. I mean, if you don't mind, I don't mind asking him that. It's not a problem.
Man. Well, as I said, Joe, as long as it's some over... As I said, Michelle Bachmann hung up. That says it all right there. And, you know, the thing is all Annie basically... All you did was basically say, look, you campaigned against the Patriot Act. Yep, now that you're elected, you voted for it.
Beautiful.
I mean, what's wrong with it? That's a... You can even bullshit your way through that question. But of course, like the typical two-faced, lying, no good witch she is, she just
Annie,
couldn't answer the question.
Annie, I'm kissing you right now, right over the door.
Well, let me tell you, if you can go back to the archives when we had him on, she interviewed Bachman separately, but if you, when she asked the way she worded that question to the congressman about improprieties, I thought to myself, oh my God, I was waiting for the music because I thought this was one of them 7 p.m. tabloid shows. Did this man get caught naked with his pants down? Then they played the music, ding, coming up next. I was like, oh, here we go, Annie. But you know what? He outright said what happened, he said, was wrong. He said, I've answered this question, he said, and I've apologized for it. He said, and he also said he now has a relationship with his ex-wife. He goes, it goes deeper than what people said. And he said, if they don't want to vote for me based on that, he says, I can understand it. He said, but we've all moved on from here. And
no, we
so,
haven't
I mean,
moved
I,
on
I
from there. Not as far as I'm concerned. I wouldn't beat a dead horse, but I would dovetail from that question to other questions of trust. If you can't be trusted to stay faithful to a person that you supposedly love, what makes us as taxpayers think that you can be faithful to us? So I would have dovetailed.
Well, I think that was the question, wasn't it, Annie? You asked.
I think
that kind of
was
the
close
question.
To that.
Oh, Annie, I'm French kissing you.
Oh,
all right,
Joe,
but listen, we're down to
us.
Our last 2 minutes here, guys. Down to
no,
last 2 minutes.
I just warned Frenchie. Don't worry about it.
All right. Keep your hands off her, Joe.
Oh, well, I know she's married. She's only taking it in fun, right?
All right. Listen, we're going to be back on Friday. We're going to be back on
Friday.
Okay. Same bat time, same bat station, and our guest is going to be Derek Grayson. He's a candidate for senator out of the state of Georgia. And let everyone know that the first the first and I believe it's the fourth, that Tuesday and Friday of October 1st week, we will not be on the air. I will be visiting my father, who's not exactly healthy, and
I'll
come back
better.
Good enough. So until then,
I'm going to serve my 1 week in jail for community service.
Thanks, Joe,
right,
for
Annie,
joining
then.
Us. And right. Joe, back on Friday to cause more trouble.
That's it.
Good night, everybody. Good afternoon.
Good night.
Hey,
good night, and God bless you all. See you on Friday.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up. Trouble
you've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.